Hello, and welcome to episode 121 of Wada Hockey, where we talk all things Texas hockey and the stories and culture that surround it. We are in the thick of the off season, but we've got a special guest lined up today. Before we bring him in, make sure to follow us on all social media platforms, all at Wada Hockey. And with that, you know the drill. We got to catch up. It's just Shannon and I today, the coach of Team Wada Hockey. Shannon, how are you? Hey, you got to bring the mic up to your face.
I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay. I spent last week in Irvine. I went to Narch. That was a trip.
Yeah?
That was a trip. You know, coming from ice hockey, going to Narch, you're like, I don't understand why there's so many people here. But
you're referring to roller hockey, by the way, for the people that don't know what Narch is.
Yes.
That's a different breed.
It is a different breed. People are so chill. I don't know. I'm really digging this whole roller hockey thing.
I can tell you when I worked at Pure Hockey, I could tell the moment someone walked in the door, I was like, they're here for wheels. they just scream roller hockey. Take that for what it is.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you got to see some pretty cool stuff while you were in California.
I did. And
can you disclose? Are we allowed to disclose?
Maybe not at this time.
Oh, the mystery. That's all right. We'll keep that. That is a cliffhanger for a future episode. I saw some pictures. They were insane. We'll talk about it after we get done recording.
I can. There was a few of us that went to a certain Vegas Golden Knights owner's house. And he
was it just a house?
It was a compound, I suppose. Okay. 5-acre Pasadena compound, where he's got his house, of course, but then he also has a house for his own private rink that's bigger than my own house. Probably four of my house, and I have a 3,500 square foot house. So I mean,
humble,
understated. But yeah, I have some pictures we can share. I'll throw together a video we can share as well. But it was made me realize where I am in my life.
I mean, we all can't own professional hockey teams. Maybe one day.
Maybe one day.
Hey, you're the coach of a damn good beer league team, though.
I am. Thank you.
You are. Things are same for me as always. Just nose to the grindstone, moving and working. I am super excited. You guys heard me talk about it last week. Our friends Third Line Draft, fantastic sponsors of the podcast, are having a Third Line Draft experience in North Texas at NYTEX. I believe the dates are August 25th, 6th, and 7th. There is still time to sign up, so make sure to head over to thirdlinedraft.com. Remember, it's spelled D-R-A-U-G-H-T, thirdlinedraft.com, to get signed up today. You'll probably see a few of us, if not almost everyone from the podcast there at the tournament. So it's going to be a blast. And you guys know the drill. Sauce toss. It's summer here in Texas. It's literally going to be over 110 degree heat index for like the next week. So maybe sauce toss indoors, because apparently Pete Delkus, if you know the guy, is telling us to stay indoors because it's that hot outside. But doesn't mean you can't play sauce toss wherever you go. And use code WADASAUCE to get 10% off your entire order at saucetoss.com. Hashtag bags for beauties. And last but certainly not least, Shannon, because Jason is not with us today. If you are looking to replace your moldy old hockey bag with a broken zipper, check out conwayandbanks.com. They make premium quality bags that are built to last, including removable organizers to keep your gear organized. It keeps everything dry with waterproof materials and gigantic vents. Jason, my favorite part is just the look, but Jason's favorite part is the built-in foot mat that keeps your feet dry in those wet, damp, moist locker rooms. They come in three different sizes with, I think, five different color patterns, including the all-white. Mm. That's my favorite. I'm going to get it, and you're going to hate it. But either way, you're going to be able to find a bag that you love. So go get over to conwayandbanks.com, get 10% off using code WADAHOCKEY10, and get your gear to the rink. Shannon, you've got to do it because Pat and Jason aren't here in staff.
Okay,
that was good. All right. Now that we got through the pageantry, up next, we have got a special guest hopping on the podcast, a product of Flower Mound, Texas. We are a Texas-based hockey podcast, and this is a professional hockey player from Texas. He was the 36th overall draft pick in the 2009 NHL entry draft and played in the NHL for the Phoenix Coyotes and the Washington Capitals. He played his college hockey at the University of Michigan. That one is partial to me. Go Blue. And has been playing professionally overseas for the Nuremberg Tigers. These names are going to absolutely buckle me. Iserlohn Roosters, great mascot. And most recently, HC Slovan Bratislava. Welcome to the podcast, Chris Brown. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you all for having me.
Absolutely. Sorry if I insulted any of your former teams by absolutely butchering those names.
I mean, as famous as this podcast probably is, I don't know if they're going to hear it. So I think you're just fine.
You know what? That's exactly what we thought when we had some guys that played over in Liga, and now I'm planning a trip to Finland in December. So
there you go.
You never know. You never know. But I have a feeling that English isn't as prominent of a language in some of the places that you are playing at right now.
You'd be surprised. We've learned, my wife and I have definitely learned, that anybody 40 or younger is almost fluent in English.
Well, shit.
Yeah. They are. So they're actually required to start taking English in first grade. And they take it all through high school. So essentially by the time they're 18, 19 years old, they're almost fluent in English, and it's all for tourism. That is the sole purpose of it.
Whoa. Okay. Well, that's a bit of a culture shock.
Yeah. It was surprising. That's for sure.
Okay. So let's just dive right into it then. So we are, like I said, in the midst of the off season. What's an off season like for you, and how is it treating you so far now that you're playing overseas professionally?
Off seasons are always much shorter than you would like.
Right.
We usually get home if we do well, right after Easter. So it's earlier, obviously. So I get to watch the entire playoffs when I come home, which is always nice.
Yeah.
And then I'm actually leaving on Sunday to go back over for training camp. And training camp is usually like 6 weeks long. So it's... Yeah, it's much, much different than NHL and AHL training camps.
That is insane. So is there a lot more off-ice training that goes into it there? Or is it basically like you get off the plane, you get to the rink, and they're like, all right, strap them up, let's go. You're skating for the next 6 weeks.
I mean, a lot of it is definitely more on-ice based because they don't have as many rinks and they don't have as much ice available for the European guys. Most of the big cities or even countries, like Germany only has... I want to say like 5 or 6 rinks in the summer for the entire country.
Oh, wow.
So those guys, if you want to go skate, you got to go to a national team and skate with them, or you got to go live in Berlin or wherever it may be if you want to get ice. So a lot of these guys don't skate a whole lot in the summer. And then those 6 weeks, it really picks up for ice. I mean, we're fortunate here. We get total access whenever we want. So,
I mean, before we kind of dive into the backstory and kind of your upbringing and why hockey, what's it like coming back and getting on the ice here? Is it kind of surreal to be like, I grew up kind of playing on these sheets, and now I'm coming back as a professional? I played in the AHL and the NHL and professionally overseas, and now I can basically call a rink and be like, hey, listen, I need some ice time. When's the best time for me to come out? When can it be available?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've been super fortunate for many, many reasons, but coming back, making phone calls to the little people that I know and that probably know who I am still. I've been overseas for a while. We got a good group of guys that we go out and skate and we train and we do all those things. And I rely heavily on Cosmo Clark. He's actually he's a youth hockey coach.
Wonderful man.
I mean, I've known him since I was like 6, 7 years old. So I rely heavily on him in the summer for ice sessions. And it's a text that says, hey, is there ice available this week? And he said, yep, give this guy a call or you can come out, skate with me, do whatever you want. So super.
Yeah. And I think that it kind of, it speaks to the hockey world as a whole, especially here in Texas specifically, because not that there are so few, but there are so few that have made it out of Texas and gone to a professional level. But the hockey community here specifically, and I'm sure it's this way in every other state that has any kind of hockey community, it's so small. It's huge, but you say one name and you're like, yeah, I know that guy. I skated with him, or I've been part of one of his drop-ins, or like I practiced with one of his kids. It's just, it's bananas. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, and as small as it seems here, it feels like it's even smaller once you go overseas. I mean, you know one person who knows another guy, you instantly become friends, and then now you're traveling to see those new friends, and hockey is so, so small. And I'm sure that's probably like that for most sports, but hockey just seems like the character guys that you have, the families that you meet. It's just, like you said, it's so small. And here it's drastically small. I mean, there's only a handful of guys that have made it, but a lot of guys do come back, which is super nice. And a lot of the stars guys just stayed.
Yeah.
Which says a lot about just the area in general. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So speaking of Texas, let's just dial it all the way back to the beginning. You're from Flower Mound, grew up in that area. You also went to Flower Mound High School where you played football. So I'm curious, because obviously everyone that listens to this podcast for the most part is from Texas and they know football is king in Texas. You played high school football, you played hockey. What was the deciding factor where you or your brain kind of just switched and you were like, it's hockey. I'm done with football. Like, this has been fun, but I'm all in on hockey.
I mean, I would miss football practices for hockey practice. I would miss baseball tournaments for hockey practice. So that's the first love, right? Like, that's what it trumped everything else. I only played football because it got me girlfriends. I mean, that's pretty much, and it was hanging out with your buddies.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it. I mean, it was something, like you said, it's Texas high school football. It's just something that you do. I never really loved it. I wasn't fast enough. I wasn't, big enough at the time. We had a pretty good football team for varsity, but I knew I wasn't going to pursue that for sure.
You can't beat those fighting farmers. You just can't.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Back in the day when that was the only school, for sure, you could not beat them. Yeah.
I remember the playoffs.
You throw some skates on the feet, though, and things change a little bit. You get a little bit faster than everybody else.
Yeah, well, a lot of my buddies don't know how to do that. So
Exactly. So from your experience, like you just said, not a lot of people played hockey growing up. What was growing up in hockey like for you in Texas? And what do you think kind of maybe made a difference in your career playing here versus maybe playing in a hotbed like Minnesota or, like a Chicago or somewhere up north?
Well, at the very beginning, my dad grew up playing hockey. He's from Erie, Pennsylvania. So that was the instant love, is just there's a relationship with your dad. So
yeah,
that was awesome. He coached me briefly in the beginning. But a major influence I had was Joni Latola. I don't know if you guys know who Joni is.
I used to work with him.
Yes. So Joni is a Finnish, former Finnish professional hockey player. He moved here and
in 93.
Yeah. I don't fully understand why he moved here. I don't remember that part of the story.
He moved down with the team.
Yes. Okay. So that's what it was. So he ended up being one of my first coaches when I was a mite. So what are you, 6, 7?
Yeah.
I think. And, for the first 45 minutes of practice, it was just all skating and edge work. That was all we had. And we didn't touch pucks whatsoever. And there was practices where we didn't. And we were like, we want to have fun. This isn't fun. And looking back on that now, I think that was probably the biggest influence I could have had, was somebody teach you how to skate.
Yeah.
And if you've ever watched Joni skate, he can still do it. It's like Madonna. It's very, very, it's like a pretty skate.
Yeah.
He's got such elegance on the ice, and my kids actually love him, and he's got all these nicknames for my kids. They have a great relationship. He's a wonderful human being.
He's been around the rink since 93. I mean, he has not left any rink in Dallas.
Well, he probably stepped outside in the summer and he was like, yeah, I don't need to be outside.
Yeah, exactly.
So you go through playing, and did you play for Flower Mound High School as well, or was there more of a group travel team at that time?
No, so I played I played for many. I mean, the Junior Stars was the only program growing up until I was about a squirt, I believe. And then they had like DJHA and I think Alliance might have even been there.
Stonebriar had a team as well, Stonebriar Storm.
Yeah. So I went from the Junior Stars to the Dallas Storm, which was all, that was all based out of Valley Ranch for a long time.
Yeah.
And then when we got to Bantams, I think it was a collective agreement that we were all going to join Alliance and try to put together a really good team that could actually travel and compete. And because we played double A forever, because that's what we had. So we put together a really good triple A team. A lot of those guys went on to play college and pro. And after that, it was just time to take the next step.
Speaking of, you played your way up the ranks. You're with the U.S. National Developmental Team before heading up to play with the University of Michigan. What was that experience like, kind of being plucked out of Texas, playing with the guys that you kind of grew up with? I'm sure some of these guys went with you to the developmental team, but was it a bit of a shock when you got there, or was it pretty much like a seamless transition? You were like, all right, this, I'm here to work. That's why they brought me in, and now it's time to put the ice, or put the skates on the ice and just get after it.
Yeah, I mean, even before that, I played. I moved away from home when I was 15. I went and played for Detroit Honey Baked, and so So that decision came to hopefully get to the U.S. National Development Team, and it was to be in their backyard, and it was to be seen more, play a little better competition on a regular basis. And I think we had, from that team, I want to say there was 6 or 7 guys from the Honey Baked team that went on and played for the U.S. National Team. So it was. So I was very comfortable going in because I knew guys from Rocky Mountain District, Michigan, even out west, some California kids. Like, I knew a bunch of people. So that was, it made it easier. I was also very fortunate to commit very early. I think I was one of the first or second people to commit to that. So it made it, I had a confidence going in for sure that I was supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Great.
So, you know, you spent some time up there in Detroit. Did that have any influence on committing to the University of Michigan once you got to the collegiate level?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the old story that you hear from all football guys is you see the helmet and it's an instant love. And that happened for me. I was watching a Michigan-Minnesota game. I think it had to have been over Thanksgiving when I was like 10 years old. I don't know why it was on TV, but it was. And I was like, I want to go there. That is... And again, at 10, I thought the Texas Tornadoes were, that was it.
Same. That was like 100%.
That was all. That's all I thought about. I was like, if I could ever play there, that's, I've met, I've won. I've done everything I can. The Dallas Stars to me, like that was like, I didn't even know. I knew the NHL was there, but that wasn't in the, I never even had thought.
Yeah.
But I just fell in love, and I actually committed to Michigan before I committed to the U.S. national team. So that that was incredible. And I loved it. I had a great host family. I had two great host families, they're diehard Michigan fans. So it was I didn't take any other visits. I didn't take any other like interviews, nothing. That was the first one I had. And I was with my dad in Red Berenson's office. I was talking to Mel Pearson in Red, and then I said, I got to call my mom, see if it's okay. And I committed right then and there.
That's amazing. And I'm extremely ingrained with Michigan, because the same thing, 1997, when they won the national championship, I saw the helmets. I had mono, so I was in bed for like 2 months.
Yeah.
And because they were the best team, they were on every single Saturday. And I was like, I don't know what this team is about. They look so cool. And I've never looked back. I've never looked back. And it's funny, because as soon as Shannon was like, hey, we've got this guy, he's down to come on the podcast. And I looked up your stats and I saw University of Michigan, and I was like, sold. I'm in. Let's go. This guy is the king right now. And also, I love that you brought up the Texas Tornado, because that was kind of where my love for, I guess I wouldn't say minor league, because it was, I guess, minor league to a degree. But when they had the Ludwig brothers and they just went out and absolutely decimated people, it was so much fun. And fun fact for everyone listening, if you go to Comerica Center where the Stars practice, they still have the Texas Tornado logo in the brick in front of the arena to this day. To my knowledge, I haven't driven in the front of it. I usually go to the parking garage. Yeah. It's amazing. I love that it's still there. I hope they never move it because it's just part of the history of that place. But yeah, it's
I mean, just insane. That was the echelon. That's what I mean. Most of the guys my age, and I grew up playing with CJ, Trevor and Tyler's younger brother. So like, we were like, oh my god, like your brothers are playing for the Tornadoes.
Yeah.
And CJ is like, yeah, whatever. Like, I don't care. Like, my dad is a Hall of Famer. So,
yeah. My dad played for the Dallas Stars, the guys that you think that you'll never be able to touch. Like,
yeah.
He played for those guys.
Exactly. So, I know that you kind of had an opportunity to play an outdoor style game when you were in Michigan. That, you know, as a Texan, is like living the dream, right? What was that like for you going from playing indoor arenas to being able to play outdoors?
It was insane. I mean, I was very fortunate. I got to play 3 outdoor games in 3 years. So we got
more than I've ever done.
Yeah. So we played at Camp Randall in Wisconsin my freshman year, which was, if you've never seen it, you need to YouTube the jump around just for football games.
Yeah.
And it's 80,000 people doing jump around and the whole stadium shaking.
What?
It's incredible.
Yep.
It's just awesome. Sophomore year was the Big Chill, the Big House, which 13,000 plus, whatever that number was.
Yep.
I think I was featured in a USA Hockey magazine. It was like a picture of me and in the background. I don't think I warmed up the whole time. I just was looking in the crowd.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Because there's, I mean, when you step out to that many people, it's honestly, it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And fortunately enough, we won very handedly, so that helped too. Like, it was, you could kind of relax after we were winning so bad.
Yeah, just mercing the other team, it's fine.
Yeah,
well, it was Michigan State too, so it made it feel so much better.
So much better.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
So I mean, taking kind of a step back and looking back at that, is there anything that you kind of wish you may have done differently, or was it just like, I'm just in the moment, like whatever happens, I've made it this far, like this is huge?
No, I don't think I have any regrets on any decisions I made. I mean, if you did that, you probably would have never made it.
Yeah.
You set up, I would have done, like, I left after my junior year, and Michigan, especially, but Red at the time, he's big on, he made a 4-year commitment, and his MO was, if I think you're ready, I'll take you to the airport. Now, I had to make that very, very tough conversation. Yeah. And I was getting very pressured to turn pro. And I think it was the right, I mean, it was the right decision. I did it.
Yeah.
I got to play in the NHL. So would another year have helped or hurt? I don't know. I guess we'll never.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's just kind of cool to look back on now, and you can see these guys, you know, what's his name? Fantilli, that just got drafted to Columbus. You see a lot of Michigan products coming out of that school and turning pro and having successful careers. And I mean, it's gotta be kind of a little bit rewarding on a personal level to be like, I'm a part of that. I was part of that organization. I always will be part of Michigan. You know, you'll always have it kind of ingrained in your blood.
There's a long list of guys that have excelled much, much more in their career. I'll be at the bottom, and I'm perfectly happy with it.
Hey, but you made it, and that's all that matters. So speaking of that, you know, kind of take us back to that moment, 2009 NHL draft. Before I get into the touchy feely side of it, what was that process like, maybe from a business standpoint? Were you fielding a lot of calls? Because, I mean, you went relatively high. You were the 36th pick overall. So you have to assume that there are multiple organizations looking at you. And what was that like, kind of maybe just sitting back and going, okay, the Detroit Red Wings just called me, and now, you know, the Coyotes just called me. What was that kind of like processing for you?
So funny you said Red Wings. That was the only team I did not do an interview with.
No way.
The only team. So I went to the combine, okay. Which was in Toronto. It's like right at the airport hotel, and there's, you know, give or take 100 guys there.
Yeah.
And so you're going through, and I met with, at the time, would have been 30 NHL teams. There was only two teams I didn't meet with. It was Detroit and it was Dallas.
Oh.
So Les Jackson was like, we're not going to waste our time here. When we get home, we're going to sit down at Starbucks. That was
okay.
So I was like, okay, cool. That's fine. which I was probably the most nervous for that interview than any of the other ones.
Yeah.
Just because it's Dallas. Like that's my team. That's what I wanted to do. But the combine was super interesting. I had a lot of crazy questions. You're doing, you know, a bunch of tests. I mean, you're a piece of meat, right? And they're dissecting you and they're saying, oh, your fingers aren't as long as I think they need to be. Or, you know, like your broad jump wasn't as long as I wanted it to be. And you go into these interviews and they kind of tear you apart. They really beat you down.
Interesting. It's kind of, it just brings you back to, you know, the movie Miracle and the Herb Brooks, like, questionnaire and the goalie. Oh. And, he's like, yeah. You just took it. You just took the test. Like,
exactly. Like Eric Cairns, I don't know if you know who that is. He's a former defenseman for the Oilers, and I want to say maybe the Islanders too. And I don't remember which team that was interviewed, but he asked me to fight him in the interview.
What? Oh.
He was like, would you fight me right now? And I was like, I guess if I had to.
Sure.
Yeah. And then I want to say it was Toronto asked if I had to pick between Barack Obama, Carrie Underwood, and Sean Avery to take to dinner.
What?
Yeah. I mean, no offense to Barack Obama, but I'm picking Sean Avery every time.
I picked Sean Avery.
Oh my, that's such
like,
a.
And they were like, why? And I was like, I just got to know what's going on. Like, I don't understand what's going on in his head.
Guy's a psycho. I got to figure him out.
But like, it's questions like that, and you can't prepare for it. I mean, my agent was like, they're going to ask you some weird stuff, but I can't even tell you what that is. And they said, if you just be yourself, you can't answer wrong.
All right. Well, okay. So the combine happens. Your brain is basically scrambled eggs at this point.
Yeah.
And then you get the call. Did you go to the draft? Were you there or were you at
home? So I was there. It was in Montreal. It was at the Bell Center, which was awesome. And then, so I was projected to go anywhere from like 28 to 32.
Okay.
So they were like, you should be there. So we went, I didn't get picked. I was super disappointed. But it happens. And then the next day, it happened like 9 a.m. Like that was it. And I was like shocked. Because at that time, I still didn't even, like, being drafted was still not even in my head. Even though I knew what I was trying to get into.
Yeah.
When you have that moment and you feel that, it's not, you can't prepare for that.
Yeah.
Like, somebody's like, we want you to come work for us, essentially. Yeah. And it's your dream. And that's your dream. It's your dream job, and you get to do it.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
On top of that, you know, you've worked for this your whole entire life. You, like you said, you mm-hmm. put other practices behind hockey practice. You gave up probably friendships and other kind of relationships to be able to pursue this career. And you get that call and you get that draft. And then the day comes where you actually get to play mm-hmm. on NHL ice for an NHL game.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I'm sure I have a lot to swear, but it was shitting my pants.
Yeah.
I mean, so that was the lockout year. And so I started out really well. I was in Portland, and actually a lot of the younger NHL guys that were on their entry-level contracts were playing in the AHL. They wanted to get those guys over just in case the lockout ended abruptly. So a lot of guys from overseas. So Phoenix had a couple guys that were like Oliver Ekman-Larsson was on my team.
Okay.
Michael Stone, who plays in Calgary. I think he actually just retired. But a lot of guys that played in the NHL the previous year were playing. So that was awesome. And I did well. And then we went through what was like a mini training camp that kind of put the AHL season on a hold for, I think, 2 weeks or something. So everybody could go to training camp and kind of try out, end up making the team. And my first game was against Tammy Solani.
Not a big deal.
Yeah.
Not a big deal.
So
just a tiny mountain to climb.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh my gosh, like I gotta play against him. Now on the other side too, on defense was my, one of my former teammates, Cam Fowler for the US national program. So I was like, oh, I get to play against Cam. And then it's Solani. And
you're like, oh, hey, what's up, Cam?
Yeah.
Timu.
Yeah. So it was just insane.
So outside of that moment, because obviously, you know, you spend some time in the NHL, you spent some time in the AHL. Was there another moment that you just kind of went, oh my God, like that guy's across the ice from me right now?
Yeah, I have two actually.
Okay.
So, and they're both the same player.
Okay.
Okay.
So, my last NHL game was in Florida. I was with Washington, and it was the dad's trip. So that was the coolest experience I think you could ever have, right?
That was awesome.
Last NHL game, and Jágr's out there.
No way.
Oh, my God.
So my dad is from Erie, PA, but was born in Pittsburgh. So that was – my other team was the Penguins growing up.
Okay.
So I line up against Jágr, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Be cool.
Yeah. Fast forward – 3-4 years, we're in a preseason tournament. I'm playing with the Nuremberg Ice Tigers, some overseas, and Jágr's team, Klondo.
Yeah,
he's in the same preseason tournament, and I line up against him again.
Oh my gosh, he had to smell great.
Yeah, just I wish he still had like the long mullet.
Yeah,
to, like really put your childhood dreams into perspective, but. After the game, we were shaking hands and I was like, hey, can I talk to you for a second? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. Super. I mean, the nicest human being.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, I gotta let you know, like my last NHL game was against you. And he goes, I wish I could remember. And I'm like, I wish you could too. That means I didn't really do anything, but he ended up offering me a contract to come play for him the next year.
No way.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I had a contract again in Nuremberg, but it was like a super cool moment. I have a picture with him on the ice. It's like, it's just one of those, like, that's an aha moment for me with Jágr, for sure.
Yeah. That's unbelievable. And the guy's a freak. I mean, what is he, 56, 57 now? And he looks like he could absolutely just go back to the NHL tomorrow.
Well, he scored a goal last year or something. His situation's like super unique. He only plays home games because he has to. So they sell tickets because if he didn't play, then the team would fold.
Right.
It's crazy.
Because it was his dad's team, right, before he passed. And he kind of made a promise to him saying, I'll keep the team running as long as I physically can.
It was. And, like, he had to, like, redo the whole rink. And, like, he put in a ton of money that he probably didn't have for other reasons, I believe, that everybody kind of knows from Jágr. But, like, he just – it was so surreal.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I used to work for the Stars, so I kind of have, like, I understand a little bit, you know, like my son has skated with Bob Bassin and, you know, Fink and I have like a working relationship with Marty Turco and to see.
Love and Brett Severin, who still owes you little Kingsville shout out. Yeah.
Brett.
Yeah. Brett.
$100.
Yeah. Brett Severin, stole some fries from her during a pregame at the AAC.
Yeah. I'm not surprised by that at all.
Yeah. She's very bitter about it.
Yeah,
and he's threatened to pay her in pennies. So we'll see how that story evolves.
I'm trying to say I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, yes. I will always
have one more. I actually have one more story for you.
It's
speaking of Marty Turco.
Please share.
Yes.
So I grew up a Michigan fan. I watched the same game that you watched.
Right.
When they did the ribbon cutting ceremony at the AAC, I was invited to go sit on stage. They invited a bunch of some youth basketball and hockey. I sat next to Turco. And so he's giving me like the elbow and stuff. And my mom's sitting 20 feet in front of me. She's like, do not hit him back. Like, do not do it.
Don't embarrass me.
And then I met him actually like last year, like again, re-met him.
Yeah.
And, I had to tell him the story and he goes, that was you? And he goes, I was like, yeah, that was me. And I was like, I went to Michigan. Like I tried to do what you did. And he was like, you made me feel so old. Like, so now Turco and I actually have a decent relationship now, but I was that kid that I just like another moment where I had no idea who Marty Turco was.
Yeah.
Other than I saw him play at Michigan and I'm like, oh, he's a star. Like again, no idea.
Yeah. Well, it's cool now, and I'm sure you've kept up with it. Al Montoya, another product of Michigan, now works for the Stars. We've had a very, very fortunate opportunity to meet him and Turco at the same time. And, man, Turco, I love Turco. He just has the business face because he's out for Kingsville. Al Montoya, Monty,
yeah,
polar opposite.
Can I tell you how weird it is that Montoya and I have kids the same age? I'm like,
yeah, that's fine. It's completely fine. So kind of, you know, bringing it full circle, you're playing overseas now. You've been playing overseas for a little while. We've had a very, very fortunate opportunity to have a couple of guys who play in Liga. One guy that played, I will never get the league acronym right, but it's the league in Great Britain with the Cardiff Devils.
I don't know that one either. Yeah,
I think it's EIHL, I believe. Something like that. I'm sorry, everyone in Great Britain. Your food's terrible. Anyway, sorry. No one should have beans for breakfast. But moving on. The fans. That's the one thing that I've always thought. The NHL is a very, very special league. Obviously, it's the top league in the entire world. The best of the best are there. But the fan interaction in games overseas is second to none. What was that like? Have you been able to experience like the streamers, the smoke bombs, the chants? Yeah. Was that a little bit like, obviously you've had the unique opportunity of playing in front of over 100,000 people. What's it like kind of going from the American fan or the North American fan base to going over there? And then like, they all have just, you know, audition chants. They know exactly what to say. And you're like, what are they saying? Like, what? This is unreal.
Well, that's the first thing is like, what are they saying? That's where you're like, I have no idea the language. So let's start there. And a lot of it is just yelling chants at the other team. And it's the other fans. And I don't know if you've ever seen the movie like Green Street Hooligans.
I absolutely love that movie. Okay. Yes.
So not to that extreme, although there have been altercations, I believe. But
fair enough.
My first game, so when I was with Iserlohn. So the Roosters, the logo that you like.
Okay. Iserlohn. Thank you. Iserlohn,
yeah. So first game, we're playing, I was with, so Chad Costello and Jack Combs are both on that team.
Oh, wow.
Oh, we know those guys. We've heard of them.
Yeah. So Costi and I are standing in the back of the line getting ready to go on the ice, and the entire rink is just filled with smoke.
Yeah.
And we're like, what? And they're just screaming. We're like, what are we doing? Why did we do this? Where are we? And it was like I played in the NHL. I played, you know, against some guys that are super tough. And I'm just like, I was so nervous. And it was a preseason game. So I'm like, what is happening? Now it feels weird when you watch other games and you're like, I feel like the crowd's not into it.
Yeah.
It's like it's a college hockey atmosphere, essentially. Yeah, or it's a soccer game.
Yeah, 100%.
It's a soccer game. And they have their chance, and they're super passionate. Whether it's good or bad, they are super passionate.
Yeah, that's one thing that's a big reason, like why I'm trying to get over to Finland. It's just to be a part of it, like just to be there, because it seems like such a unique experience, like versus anything that we have here on a hockey level outside of, you know, maybe college hockey at the, you know, the main universities. But obviously Yost Arena, one of those places, you know, we didn't really get to touch on that, but that's okay. That's just got history just out the wazoo. But we kind of asked this of the guests that we've had that play overseas. So I have to ask, because I'm very curious, the food, what kind of adjustment was that for you? And out of the teams that you played with, what has been your favorite place to play from maybe a cuisine standpoint, where you're like, man, this food is unreal?
Well, so far I've only played in Germany. I'm going to Slovakia here on Sunday. So I don't know what that cuisine is going to be. My assumption is it's going to feel very Eastern European, a lot of pork, a lot of potato, kind of that stuff. Germany is very similar in that. The one thing I have found about Germany is I feel like their produce is so much better.
Well, yeah.
Just tastes a bunch better. I'm sure it has to do with pesticides and everything else here. But it just tastes like a tomato doesn't taste nearly as good here as it does there. And I don't even really like tomatoes that much, but it's just, you can just tell a difference. But if you ever get a chance to go to Italy, just go. It is by far the best food I think you'll ever have. I've been to France and they say French cuisine is supposed to be the best. I think Italy is by far the best food you could ever have.
Yeah, I mean, what do they say at Olive Garden? And here, your family. So, I mean, it's got to be like, oh.
Yes, very similar.
Yeah, yeah. They have Alfredo sauce there. It's probably super popular.
Same thing. Breadsticks are the exact same. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. So now that you've played overseas in a different, sorry, Shannon.
It's fine.
What now on the ice, out of the kitchen, out of the restaurants, what was that transition like from a hockey sense to go from the NHL, AHL, North American style play to playing overseas in Germany? How long did that kind of take you to adjust, or was it kind of a seamless transition for you?
It took me a little bit for sure. I mean, obviously the rink's bigger. So you got an extra, I think it's 25 feet in width, give or take. So, I mean, tactically and technically speaking, your angles are different. Whether that's skating or shooting. Normally in the NHL, if you shoot from the wall, you could have a chance of going in. If you shoot from the wall in Europe, it's probably not going in. So you got to play a little smarter. I don't want to say you have to play more reserved, but you can't run around because you're going to tire yourself out. Like going to make a hit, making that extra step will actually cause you to be out of position more than it will help even making contact.
Right.
There's a lot of little tactical things, and it's actually now it's strange when I come back here and just do skates in the summertime with some buddies and we do scrimmages and stuff like that. It feels so tight. I'm like, oh, I don't have that time and space anymore that I had, you know, a couple months ago. So that for sure, it took me a little bit. I played a pretty physical style back here.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to say it's soccer because it's not, but it's not the same. It's not a North American style of game. It's definitely more fluid, more flow. Germany is actually, it feels like an older AHL, which is nice. But you don't have, there's not as many fights. There's not as many scrums. There's more penalties, more stick penalties, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to be a little more tactically smart in your approach to the game.
So obviously there is a tad bit of a language barrier, and sometimes not, because there are a lot of, they call imports that are playing over in Germany. The chirp game has got to be interesting. Have you been able to kind of adopt any of the German sayings while you were playing in Germany where you just knew?
100%. I mean, look, FU is universal. That is the biggest, that's the most universal chirp that you could have. But most of the coaches in the league are actually North Americans. Or have either coached in North America. So English is the primary language in the locker room. That is just, most of the drills are in English. All the tactics are written in English. Everything's pretty much English.
Yeah.
I picked up enough German to understand, not enough to hold a conversation. But you kind of get, you pick up on some things, and guys also know that we don't have like stat packs over there, but guys know who's coming into the league.
And oh, so yeah.
It is look across, look down the bench, and not to pick on the European guys, but they know. And it's just, I mean, elite prospects is at your fingertips.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now that you've had the time in Germany, you're going to Slovakia. What do you think might be the outside of the we talked about the language barrier really not being an issue. What do you think might be kind of the biggest obstacle going to a new country? I'm assuming it's a new league as well. Are they part of the same league?
New league. So I think that's going to be the biggest adjustment. I came from Germany for the last 6 years where I kind of, you know, that first year was a little bit of a transition. But I got pretty comfortable in that league, and I knew the players. I knew most of the imports that are coming in. This league, just looking through elite prospects, I don't know many of the imports.
Yeah.
I know some that are on my team. I've never met any of these guys personally. I played against a couple of them, but I don't know many of them. I don't really know any of the Slovakian guys. So it's going to be figuring that part out of it. Like the game away from the game will be, I think, an adjustment that I'll have to figure out. It's a professional hockey league. So I'm expecting it to be professional. I'm expecting it to be a good league. Slovakia actually just did really well, World Championships and World Juniors.
Yep.
So I know that the talent is there. And we grew up playing against the Slovakians in like the Ivan Hlinka tournament over, I think that's like Christmas time or something over there. I'm not sure. But it'll be good hockey. It'll definitely be an adjustment, but it'll be good.
Nice.
You get to take your family with you, right?
I do. So I'm going over early. For the last year was the first year that I did that. I have a 5-year-old son and a 3-year-old son. But we're going to leave them here for a little bit. Again, it's a new country. It's a new team. Got to figure out the lay of the land before they get there. Make sure our internet and our Wi-Fi are working. And
right.
All the essentials. Find the grocery store. Make sure we can figure out what that's going.
Make sure restrooms are actual, like toilets, not holes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we're going to. So I leave. But yeah, they get to come over. Both of my sons were actually born in Germany, which is super cool.
That's awesome.
They both went to a German school, all German. They both know enough. They won't tell us anything, but my oldest is definitely very knowledgeable in the language. So it's just cool life experiences that I hope they remember. I know they're still super young, but I hope they remember it. Oh, yeah. And again, for me, I get to travel the world.
Yeah. So. Absolutely. Well, we appreciate your time. We appreciate you coming on. We just got a couple more rapid fire style questions that we'll throw at you. Keep the answers as short as you want, as long as you want, completely up to you. Shannon and I will kind of alternate on these, but I'll just start it right off. We've talked about food a lot. I'm hungry. No surprise there. But what is your go-to pregame meal?
It has been chicken parm since I was probably 7 years old. It's probably so standard, but
I was about to say John Buchagross would be very happy right now.
That's just what I had, and that's what I still try to have as much as I can. Now Germany was more schnitzel and pasta with some cheese on it, but
yeah,
a little different, but visually it looked the same.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
Yeah,
yeah, just a little brain trickery before you play a game. It's
fine. Yeah. It's got cheese.
Yeah,
it's normal.
It's fine.
What about like a pregame playlist? Do you have anything that you just like a style or a genre you got to listen to?
I feel like I used to.
Yeah.
And that's when I was, you know, I don't want to say like getting really amped up for a game. I had like some metal on there. I had some rap. I have country. I mean, I play country music all the time. That's just where I grew up, as you guys know. Yeah. But I've kind of, I don't plug into the aux cord in the locker room. I let those guys do it.
We're old now.
I don't know half of the people that are playing. I don't know half the songs. And then when they play German songs, I really have no idea.
Oh, that's got to be a trip.
So they have like German rap, and it's just I'll throw some shade at some guys just because I'm like, all right, we got to change this because nobody understands what this guy's saying.
No, it just sounds like he's sneezing behind a beat.
Yeah, so, but I have a wide range of genres that I do enjoy, but I don't know if I have like a specific playlist that I love.
Okay, I mean, it makes sense. It just depends on the day.
Yeah, I mean, I could be really angry or not angry at all.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. So we've been very fortunate to have quite a few people here that have lived in Texas or are from Texas. So obviously we have to ask, when you're back home, do you have a go-to Whataburger meal?
Yeah. I get a jalapeno cheeseburger with a chocolate milkshake and fries. Like that is, solid. That's it.
It's a standard.
It is. It really is. And I'll be honest, and this is going to sound so bad, I'm not a fan of the Dr. Pepper shake.
Oh, I'm not either.
I'm not a big sweets person. I can't do the sweets.
I love sweets. Like, really, it's bad. It's a definite kryptonite. But I'm not a fan of that. I just don't.
It's a miss.
Yeah, it's just, you don't need to mix it.
Okay. On the flip side then, because that's obviously like a dinner meal.
Yeah.
The breakfast menu. Are you a taquito guy? Breakfast on a bun? Breakfast burger? Breakfast in a bowl? I can go over the whole menu.
I mean, and this is going to sound super terrible too, but like I would rather go to like Sonic and get a breakfast burrito.
That's fair.
Like I just, and also, honestly, it's like the closest Whataburger we have is just a little too far.
It's, you know what? I've been there. I'm a Taco Bueno guy, even though I am a self-proclaimed Taco Bell like lover of all things. Shout out Volcano Menu. But man, the Taco Buenos are just so few and far between that I'm like, Taco Bell, there's like four within a mile.
Yeah, I mean, there's like three Sonics, there's three Chick-fil-A's. I mean, it's just like I'll do a chicken biscuit for sure.
Yeah.
Like that is, I mean, you only want one on Sunday too. That's the problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then there's just nothing that can ever match it on Sunday.
No, only those, only the Dos Equis guy can get it on Sunday.
Yep. Yeah. I forgot about that. What a campaign that was.
I know.
So we're going to completely take a left turn here. So if you could, if you could define your legacy in one word, what would it be? Yeah,
that's a hard hitting question.
Oh my God. You said those were softballs. That's
I'm sorry. I wrote that down and I was like, this is an intensement. This is an intense question.
When I read that, I was like, oh boy. Okay.
That's an Aroldis Chapman fastball at my chin.
Yeah, it is.
No, it'll be super easy. You're going to do great. How's your word?
One word to describe my legacy.
No pressure.
Yeah.
I want to say enjoyment.
Oh, okay.
That's solid.
Like I enjoyed up until now everything that I've been able to do.
Up until this question. Yeah.
Yeah, up until this specific podcast and that question, it's been solid enjoyment.
Enjoyment. I really do believe, like, it's, I mean, in terms of just the game, I've enjoyed everything. I got to meet so many people. I got to experience, travel the world. I got to live out my dream. I scored two goals in the NHL. Like, I've got to do those things.
Yeah. And I mean, we didn't even get to touch on that. We'll have to have you back on maybe once things get settled, and we'll wake up super early and catch up with you as far as the season goes. We're fine with that. Okay. Last one. This one is, it might take a little thinking, but it's much less intense than the last one. This is more of a knuckleball, if you will. Hollywood calls and they say, Chris, we want to make a movie about your life, but we don't know who to cast as you, and we need you to pick the guy that's going to play Chris Brown in the story about your life. Who is getting the call? Who's playing you in a movie?
So this one's actually super easy because you guys might see it, might not. I've been told I look like Bradley Cooper.
I was going to say Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
I've been told that by numerous people, which is super awesome for me. I don't see it at all.
Or if you need like a 007 British version, you could do Henry Cavill.
I don't even know who that is. So that sounds
Superman.
Funny. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that'd be nice.
You know, it's funny you said that because my 94-year-old grandmother, I was like, she goes, who is that handsome man? I saw her on Sunday and she was like, who's that handsome man? And I was like, it's Henry Cavill. She goes, I don't know. I was like, Superman. She goes, oh, yeah, Superman.
He should just roll with Superman. Like that. Yeah. If I was him, I'd just be Superman.
Yeah, which is ironic because he is, in fact, heavily British and a giant nerd. And he's like, I'm Superman. And everyone's like, yeah, okay, whatever you say, man.
Sure. If I could have one person read a book about myself, though, it would be Matthew McConaughey.
I mean, that's par for the course.
Yeah.
Him or Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, but that's a different, that's, I don't know. Now we're changing a lot.
Yeah, that's.
Okay. Or Doc Emmerich. That would be fun too.
Yeah.
But you'd have to throw in some serious adjectives into your autobiography for him to read that.
Yeah. You know what? And on that note, I think I'm going to throw my curveball out there. I mean, I'd be silly not to say Razor. I mean, hearing him try to be serious would be one of the funniest things in the world to me.
You just reminded me. Another shocking interaction with a person. I got to meet Ralph Strangis in an airport in Dallas airport. And my wife was there with me. We were on my way to a wedding. Uh-huh. And I like couldn't, like, I was trying so hard to like muster up the courage to go talk to him.
Just
super nice guy. I just,
isn't
like,
that wild?
I was like, this is the guy I listened to my whole childhood.
Yeah.
This was it. And my wife's like, he's just a guy. Go talk to him. Like, it's not just a guy.
You don't understand.
When my dad made us leave the third period with 10 minutes left to beat the traffic, I listened to Ralph until I got home.
Yeah.
That's such a dad move.
I know.
Like, hey, listen, we got to get out of here. Like, dad, there's
school
10
night,
minutes
buddy.
Left.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's a school night. We got to get you home.
Yeah.
When realistically, he's like, I do not want to sit in traffic. I'm ready to go to sleep.
Yeah, especially then, because that was like reunion times, and that was a nightmare. So,
yeah, I remember.
Man. that was a special arena, but I don't miss it outside of the atmosphere. I love the AAC.
Oh yeah,
way better. And I guess you know what? Before we wrap this up, do you get the chance to go to Stars games at all, or see any of those guys play? Or obviously, with you being in season, it's got to be a little tough. But do you get to experience that anymore?
I mean, not really. We were
going to
do it.
Playoff games?
I didn't. I was going to, And again,
but the traffic was bad.
Yeah. And my dad was like, we have to leave. And, yeah. No, I was going to, and actually a good buddy, Austin Smith, who was drafted by the Dallas Stars, local kid from here as well. He's got season tickets and all this kind of stuff. And I wanted to go to a playoff game so bad. Then I was like, I'm just going to kind of sit at home and watch it. It's something about going to a game when you're still playing that feels weird.
Yeah.
And when it's like old teammates are out there and like want to support them. Cause I don't really have a favorite team anymore.
Yeah.
I played for two, but all my buddies are in Vegas and Winnipeg and Dallas, Luke Lendening, who I went to college with for 3 years.
Oh yeah. Just, yeah.
I mean, I got buddies everywhere, so I don't really have a favorite team, but it's just something about going to a game while you're still playing. It just seems a little, I don't know if jealousy is the right word, but it's like, I feel like I could be out there. I know it's way in the past, but yep. I think once I'm done, I'll do the dad thing, take my boys. We'll leave 10 minutes early. We'll get out of there. Yeah, we'll do the whole dad thing.
Do what I do. Only take them to the Saturday games because they're at 1 o'clock.
Yeah. That's like going to the Ranger game at 1. Like you gotta, yeah.
Which thankfully we can do now and not die in the heat. Shout out to that. I love that.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Chris, man, honestly, super, super appreciate the time that you took to sit down with us. Obviously, you've got a busy schedule with traveling coming up and getting ready for the next season. Just thank you for coming on and sharing some of those stories with us. We'd love to have you back on in the future. So best of luck to you, moving forward. And obviously, we'll definitely have you back on in the future.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thanks for the softball questions there up until the end. That was awesome.
Sorry,
sorry about that. Yeah, I'm going to be tossing and turning about that one tonight.
Yeah. This was awesome, guys. This is probably the most fun I've ever had on a podcast, so this is great.
Awesome. Love to hear it. Yeah. Love to hear it. Well, with that being said, Shannon, make sure all the babies are safe, so let them know.
Always make good choices.
And don't, for any reason whatsoever, even if you completely derail a softball question podcast with a curveball like that, forget your Kermit tattoos.